a black guy, a Jew, a Mexican, and a racist are all sitting on a park bench together. The black guy pulls a lamp out of his bag and starts to rub it. Smoke starts billowing out, and pretty soon a genie appears right in front of them. The genie says, "Oh my God, I've been in there for 5,000 years. Oh God. I'm so happy that all of you get one wish. Anything you want, you name it, you got it." He looks at the black guy and says, "You're up first. What do you want?" And that guy says, "I want all my brothers and sisters to go back to Africa, where we can live in peace and harmony and have all the wealth and prosperity we should have had for centuries." The genie says, "You got it." Snaps his fingers. Poof. Black guy disappears. He looks at the Jew. Jew says the same thing. "All my brothers and sisters, back to Israel. Peace, harmony, wealth, prosperity." Genie says, "Yep." Snaps his fingers. Poof. Jewish guy disappears. He looks at the Mexican. Mexican says the same thing. "Wealth, prosperity, brothers and sisters, back to the homeland." Poof. He disappears. The genie looks at the racist and says, "You're up." And the racist says, wait a minute. Hold on here. Are you telling me that all the black people are back in Africa, all the Jewish people are back in Israel, and all the Mexicans are back in Mexico?" The genie says, "That's right." And the racist says, "I'll have a Diet Coke." Racist. He's got his Diet Coke. That's all he wanted. Because he's an asshole. Welcome to Art House Radio. This is episode number 17. And we found each other yet again. Holding hands as we walk through the Art House Radio universe. Sailing the seas of the universe. Trying to find our way through the darkness. My mouth to your ears. Why are we doing this? I don't know. But whatever it is that we're searching for, it's entirely possible that we've had it the whole time. Yeah? It's possible. The things that we're looking for, they're probably already in our possession. I think that's the lesson of this show. It's the attempt of this show to find that nugget in every single situation or in every discussion. That it's about appreciating the now. Mm-hmm. Just think about it. So let me know. Let me know what you think.
Detroit.
I just got back from a lovely weekend. I went to Detroit. And look, let me just tell you this about Detroit. If you don't know, here's the deal. All right. It's fantastic.
Well, set your clock, cause it's time to rock. We rock, rock, rock all around the clock. We don't stop, we don't stop. We rock, rock, rock all around the clock. I say, don't stop the body rock. We jam, jam to moan. Dancers come from all around, around in this here G-Town. The latest steps and the latest style. Pretty faces and pretty smiles. We're looking good, everybody's clean. So set your clock, it's time for the scene.
The scene. The television dance show of the 80s. The show that turns Motown into Geek Town and lets everyone throw down. Our special guest stars on video clip are Timmy Thomas and the Rolling Stones. Plus, from the Scene Zone studios, Greens 3 and Enchantment. Plus, the greatest dancers in the whole wide world. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with your host, Nat Morris.
I like the way you guys said that. I really like the way you guys said that. Who's this?
Tamika.
Are you ready to party, Tamika?
Sure.
Who is this?
Diane Smith.
Donna, you ready?
Diane,
you ready?
Yes, I am.
Who's this?
Randy.
Who's this?
Mecca.
You ready?
Yeah.
Everybody's ready?
Yeah.
Hey, listen, before you do, though, we got to change the Miss Town, you know, as usual, from Motown to Geek Town so we can throw all the way down. Are you ready to change it? Mm-hmm. Hey, listen, guys, we got to change it. So be it. What's the name of this town?
Geek
Town. Well, are you ready to throw down? Hey, RJ, what can I say? Really, enough has been said. We go to the opening spread.
There's no reason that you shouldn't be there. Yes, there are challenges, of course. And there's no reason I shouldn't be there. I don't mean to cast stones here. But you have to understand something. If you knew Detroit in the 90s and the 80s, you would be right to be as hesitant as I've been up until recently. And in the last couple of weeks or I don't know, recently, I've had some sort of clarification. And I've been back and forth since I moved back to Michigan about whether I should go in there or not because, you know, there are challenges. But it's so bizarre. It's so wonderful. It's fascinating and strange at the same time. I don't know if it's always had that sort of, like, appeal. And I just was kind of too scared to try it out. But if you had gone to Detroit downtown in the 80s and 90s, it was basically like a war zone. That's what it felt like anyway. Now, a Detroiter, a lifer who grew up downtown might have a different story. But for people who grew up outside of that, but you know, within a reasonable range, it was almost like a myth. You went in for specific events. You went to a game or a concert or whatever. If you're a fan of alcohol, you'd go down to Detroit to maybe hit Windsor, Canada, because, you know, it's only the age of drinking, minimum age is only 19 there. So, you know, you cross the border, you get a couple of drinks, you hit a strip club, you come back to Detroit, whatever. You did what you had to do and you got the fuck out of there. That was the mentality. You didn't stop. You got a flat tire. You kept going. All right. That was, and some of that has got to be fear mongering. But make no mistake, that place was fucking dangerous. Okay. I can remember driving from Tiger Stadium, like around Michigan and Trumbull, you know, in that area. And it was just like, I can't even describe to you. During the day, it was just like wild dogs and trash floating everywhere and just miles of homeless people. And just, you can just imagine all the seedy things and liquor store after liquor store after liquor store, just rundown buildings and buildings burnt out and people living in them. And it made an impression, obviously. And I can't imagine what it must have been like to be an adult at that time. So when you grow up knowing a city like that downtown, you find it very hard to be trusting or to be able to find yourself to commit to a place where you have these memories. And I don't want to compare it to, you know, some of the places in the world that have had really tough times. Although it's hard to imagine places that have had it tougher, but you know, like let's say Baghdad. I mean, you know, there wasn't an actual war in Detroit with armies, but kind of, you know, I mean, it was a smaller scale, but we're talking about like gang violence and there's still a lot of problems, but back then it was just like a bomb had gone off and I don't know, to see it become what it is wonderful. It's fantastic and it's fascinating. And the more time I spend on there, the more I fall in love with it, to be very honest with you. But when I'm just having like, I don't know if this is the right time to use the word cognitive dissonance, but to be downtown and in the different sections and to see hipsters is like, oh my God, it must've been like, it must be like if you were in North Korea and you saw like Dennis Rodman, that's probably the equivalent of what I'm seeing hipsters in downtown Detroit this summer. I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? Yeah, that didn't happen. I mean, interesting people were always there, you know, Iggy Pop and Alice Cooper and those, you know, types of artists and things like that. But you didn't, maybe it was because I didn't stick around long enough downtown to see that, but to see it so open and this is going to sound like a terrible thing to say, but to see like small women walking around at night with not a lot of people around them, I'm really blown away by that, because they wouldn't do that if it wasn't, it didn't have a certain amount of security. And so when I'm down there at night shooting video, I'm going to museums and I'm just sort of talking with people on the street, and they're sort of reiterating everything I'm telling you. Like, this is happening. This place is turning around. They've built the rail for the M1 streetcar. It's a go. I mean, it'll be operable, you know, in the next several months or a year. That's going to change everything. And it's beautiful down there. The construction is unbelievable. The prices are already rising. Okay. It's gone through sort of like that period of emptiness. And it's still, there's not a ton of people down there. But you get the sense that something's happening. Especially in the summertime. In the wintertime, you know, we're talking about a climate where you're inside. In Toronto, yeah, there's tons of people out. But they've also got the underground there, the 20 miles of underground shops, which is fantastic. Toronto's fantastic too. But yeah, that's the thing about Detroit and all the interesting characters that you see. It's got that element. If you had told me even just a couple of years ago that I might find myself wandering through Midtown eating a vegan blueberry muffin at Whole Foods, I would have laughed at you. Maybe even spit at you for making fun of the city that I love. But it happened. It happened the other day. And I can't explain it. But I'm glad that it's happening. Detroit City. That's the skinny right now. If you're close, you gotta go. Just make it happen. I don't know what to tell you. You gotta see it with your own eyes. But if you didn't know it before, it would still be hard to get that sort of the sense of what I'm talking about, because you didn't know it before. But it doesn't matter. Everybody who wants to come there and contribute to it in a positive way, fuck yes. That's all I have to say. Hell yes.
Lisa Levy versus Marina Abramovich.
Okay, so I saw something in the news the other day, ArtNet, to be specific. And it was about artist Lisa Levy, I hope I'm saying that right, who wants to take a couple of shots at Marina Abramovich. And I'll just read a little bit of the article. Plenty of artists have gotten inspiration from Marina Abramovich, but Lisa Levy is taking it to its sort of logical next step. I'm not sure why this is logical, but the Brooklyn-based painter, conceptual artist, and psychotherapist will sit fully nude on a toilet for 2 days in January at Bushwick's Christopher Stout Gallery in a performance titled The Artist is Humbly Present. Oh, so cheeky. She's referring to the Netflix documentary on Miss Abramovich called The Artist is Present. So she's pleading a humbler approach, apparently. Those familiar with Abramovich's now legendary 2010 Museum of Modern Art performance, The Artist is Present, where she sat in front of various patrons for 736 hours in the museum's atrium, will understand the reference. But what, you might ask, would motivate someone to get naked in the middle of winter and sit on a porcelain throne in front of dozens of strangers? Quote, what's her name? Lisa Levy. I was kind of fed up with the art world and all of the pretense, Levy told Art News via telephone, noting that she sees the performance as a kind of half joke, half social experiment, one that she hopes will spark an authentic reaction from viewers. Quote, a lot of the art world is so connected with status and money and physical appearance, things like that. It's gotten really far away from what's important. She thought, what's the most vulnerable, least egotistical way a person can present themselves? The answer was clear, sitting unclothed on the toilet. Levy sees the action as a counterpoint to the kind of narcissistic artworks that place the artist on a pedestal, of which she believes Abramovich's work to be one of the most obvious examples. Quote, I was a huge fan of her up until the MoMA show, she admits. It's her values that bother me. She's so vain and so concerned with such superficial things. I'm well aware that I'm setting myself up for criticism, Levy admits, having been warned repeatedly to not check the comment section on Facebook posts regarding the event. I think the art world is taught not to respect art where the artist isn't presenting themselves seriously. And I don't take what I'm doing all that seriously. I'm just really curious to see what the experience will be like. And I think it's funny. And I think a lot of people feel the same way that I do. Yeah. This sounds very opportunist to me. So if you haven't seen The Artist is Present, the documentary, you should. First of all, you should stop this, maybe. Pause it and go and watch it. Because I thought the documentary was fucking amazing. If you're not familiar with Abramovich, you should look her up. She does a lot of performance art where she challenges not just what the human body is capable of. You know, her former husband, Ulay, they made a video where they screamed at each other for 30 minutes. They made another video where they ran into each other for a certain period of time. I think she's brilliant. And for the reason is that I think she's someone who challenges the monotony of everyday life. You know, she's just trying to call attention to the fact that other things are possible than checking in and checking out of work and Netflix and, you know, the routines that we develop. And I'm not saying that routines are bad, but it's interesting to have people like her around to sort of throw a wrench into everything. You know how when you get into a pattern where you go to work or you have a routine, you go home, you eat dinner, you watch something, you smoke a little, you go to bed. And then you get up and you do that over and over again for weeks. And then somebody calls you and says, hey, there's a thing happening tonight. Why don't you meet me? We'll have a couple of drinks. And you have a drink and you have a good time. And at first you were thinking, I don't know, this cuts into my routine. I was really hoping to watch episode 7 of The X-Files. I'm on season 9 or whatever. It's really good. I don't know if I want to go out and have fun because I'm kind of into this thing and my routine is working and I'm working on a project. And you decide, all right, I'm doing it. I'm throwing a wrench into this thing. And you do it and it's fun. And maybe you meet somebody and something good happens. You know what I'm talking about. That's what Abramovich is, I think. To me, she is. And again, this is my interpretation, and I'm a huge fan of artwork or artists being whatever the observer believes them to be. I mean, within reason, at least. I don't think it's fair to paint if you thought Abramovich was the complete opposite of what she's intending, and you're hijacking it and using it to do terrible things or something. That's different. I mean, maybe it would be just as valid as my interpretation, but I think you're always going to project whatever it is you're looking for onto whatever somebody else is doing, at least to certain degrees. So to me, when I see somebody like, Lisa Levy, that's fine. I don't have a problem with her sitting on a toilet naked, staring at people. But it's kind of already been done. That's my point. I mean, you're just exchanging the chair that Abramovich used for a toilet. And so you took your top off. Whatever. Who cares? Going back to the documentary, if you haven't seen it, and, you know, I'm going to talk about it, so if you don't want a spoiler, you should maybe stop this, although there's not much to spoil. She sits in a chair in like a gallery space, and anybody can come and sit down across from her, and they're, you know, maybe a couple feet from each other, and a lot of people stare at her and a lot of people cry, and she really looks at you, and it's so simple, but I think it's so fantastic. It doesn't matter if you know who she is or not. It's a person who's just out there, who's sitting down. You know how those people in cities who are walking around giving free hugs, and you, just like everybody else, and me included, kind of secretly want to go up to them and give them a hug? I mean, as long as it's not like some gross fat guy with his shirt off and he's sweating. I'm not going to hug that. But I mean, you know, if it's a normal looking person, we like to be touched. I didn't mean to yell touch there, but we do like to be touched. We're humans. We crave touch. That's what we crave. Most of us anyway. And there's something interesting about it. Making connections. Do you ever just like talk to someone and look them in the eye and make such good eye contact that you think, I really want to know more about this person? Or I'm very aware that I'm staring eyeball to eyeball with this person. It's wonderful. It's fantastic. It's a way to connect with somebody. And for an artist like Marina Abramovich, it doesn't matter if people know who she is. It's an artist in a major museum sitting down. There's tons of people staring every day in this exhibition, looking at her. Clearly, you get the impression that she's a big deal, even if you don't know who she is. So you have a chance to sit down and look at her. Obviously, a very small percentage of people actually got to do that. But the point is that you saw that happen for somebody else. And in the documentary, maybe we were living through screens too much, I know. But you could do that. You could go right now and take a chair and set it down in the middle of a sidewalk and put an empty chair across and a sign that says, please sit down next to me and let's just sit in silence for as long as you'd like. It would, think about how that would affect your day for the better. I think it would be pretty powerful. So if Lisa Levy wants to do this, that's great. But you know, I don't know why you'd be disappointed. Why would you be doing something that you were disappointed in seeing someone else do? Would you really go through with it? If you were really upset by what Abramovich had done, wouldn't this be an idea that you had that you didn't actually follow through with? Because you think, I'm not gonna waste my time telling the world what I'm not. That seems like an incredible amount of energy to lose. Why don't you just tell the world what you are, not what you're against? Because there's a difference.
Student expectations.
So when I was driving home from Detroit the other day, I was driving down Michigan Ave here in Lansing. And driving is a key word there because I don't drive. I did rent a car to go there. And as I'm driving back, I'm passing all these students who are crossing, the road to, they're going to class at Michigan State. And I remember seeing a couple of students that looked like so downtrodden, and like maybe they had been studying for hours or days for whatever exam, the classic academic police interrogation into how much you've been paying attention. And as I was watching these downtrodden students, I remember thinking, I wonder if these people are friendless or can't find happiness within their life, but yet they're at this large corporation known as Michigan State, insert whatever university name here. And they're thinking about their life, and they're there for a career or some sort of opportunity that will propel them down whatever road it is that they're looking for, or what they think they might want to be or to have. And it made me think about the ridiculous amount of pressure that we had, or that people have, at a young age. Can you remember back in high school getting a private consultation from your high school counselor, or maybe the counselor or somebody would come in to your class and talk about college and think about what you're majoring in? You're going to ask 17, 18 year olds to decide for the rest of their lives what they want to be? I mean, they should have been laughed out of the room. Does anybody know what they want to do? You can have moments of it. I mean, I certainly have moments, or have had moments, where I thought, yep, this is what I want to do. And you know what? It fucking changes. It's almost like the shitty school system that we have that forces kids to stay inside, sit in a chair for 8 hours, and learn the most boring fucking subjects there are in the most boring manner and the most boring language. And then when they start to squirm, we give them medicine and say that they have ADHD or ADD or whatever it is. They're kids. They should be outside, you know? And for students, as I'm just seeing all these students walking around, I'm thinking, what pressure we put on people. The English, the British, have a gap year, right? In between their high school, the equivalent of high school, and college, they get like a year. It's like a Rumspringa for the, I don't know if it's the Amish or the Quakers, where they go out into society for a year and they get to experience a different part of life. And then maybe they'll stay with that, or maybe they'll come back. But it's their choice. They're going to go out into the world and see what it's about. Shouldn't we have that here? But shouldn't it be like 10 years? 5, 6, 7 years at least? Like, listen, you just did high school. Be a citizen. Be an adult. Go out into the world. Go travel. You know, work a job and then maybe go out to South America for 6 months. Go to Europe for a year. Go over to Asia. Check it out. See what the world's about. And then maybe that'll give you an idea of what you're interested in learning or absorbing. Everybody wants to go to school to get a job. They're terrible. They're fucking terrible. Why would you want to do that? Nobody wants to go to school to learn. I think arts people do. because they sort of know that they're not going to get a job that's related unless they work, you know, if they're going to be an artist or a sculptor, they know that, well, they're going to find something that's vaguely familiar to what they study. And that's probably true of a lot of things, but I think arts people face that, or music people too, sort of have that realization in a stronger way that, listen, you're going to study something that you love, but you're not going to be able to do anything with this. I mean, yeah, you can play a Mozart sonata. Great. Could you ring up these people at Long John Silver's so that they can get on their way? The drive-thru is around the corner. So I just, it made me think about being young, that age, and going through that and wondering, why the fuck do we do that to people? I mean, 60-year-olds don't know what they want to do. Why would we try to pretend that somebody a third of that age should have everything figured out? It's like a conditioning or a control mechanism. You just try and force people to pick whatever lifeless, monotonous, repetitive 8-hour shitstorm they want to be in, that one that will give them the most pleasure or give them the most green frog skins that they can use to buy houses that are sinking them, or large cars they can't afford, or a new pair of shoes to distract them from the existential crisis that will inevitably pop up in their lives, and they're not prepared to deal with it. Suck on that, universities. How about that? It's just a thought. I don't know.
The new X-Files.
I gotta tell you, I love the new X-Files. Something fantastic about it. It fits so well within the way the show has always been, the flow of it, the crime drama element to it, and the theories that seem so crazy at first. But as the show goes on, you start to think like, well, maybe that's possible. It is possible. Again, spoiler alert, if you don't want to know anything about the first two episodes that I just saw, that you maybe haven't seen, then pause this, watch it, come back to this moment. Are you ready? Okay. So in the first episode, they're talking about alien technology. Sounds familiar? I mean, Terrence McKenna was talking about this 20 years ago, talking about how communication via computers is a good way for aliens to contact us. We didn't have any of this stuff 20 years ago. How did it grow so fast? We just got smarter all of a sudden? I don't know. Kind of weird. But listen, the show is, I think, great. I've seen some criticism on it. Like, the Nerdist said it was over the top and silly and not in a good way. Listen, I'm going to cut you guys some slack because I like the Nerdist. But I'm not sure what show you're watching, man. I think you should take another look. It's great. I mean, the only difference is that the quality of the picture is so different from the original X-Files. The original series was a lot darker, like literally darker. Kind of had like a foggy film noir kind of quality to it. But these are obviously with the times, and everything's in HD and high def or whatever you call it. So that's the only real difference, and they're older. But I thought the acting and the story writing, it's just fantastic so far. I'm glad it's back. I look forward to the rest of the 6-episode event, is what they're calling it. I think the success of this show, once people get their shit together and the critics kind of look at it and think about it and let it sink in at how good it is, I bet you anything the X-Files will continue beyond this 6-episode thing. I hope they do. I hope some of you terrible assholes out there criticizing it don't ruin it for the rest of us. So get a chance to watch it. You should definitely watch it. It's fantastic. And if you haven't seen the original, I'm running into a lot of people, specifically younger people, who don't even know what the fuck the show is. Listen, you need to get on Netflix and watch this series, all 9 seasons, and then watch these two, plus the movies. Now, the movies aren't great, but the series itself, it's fantastic. it'll set you down a path that will enhance your life and make your you-know-what hard. Thanks for listening. Art House Radio is supported by people and institutions who care enough to pay for short ads at the beginning of the show, and also by people and things who go to our website, arthouse43.com or troymeetsworld.com. They click on donate and then they send us some love. We need your support. Creative projects are never free, so any support you could give would be greatly appreciated. Where have you heard that before? Quote, Adrian Piper believed that the art object, material or conceptual, in its assumption of separateness and stability, could no longer relate to a society in turmoil. She set out to make performances which make strange people's perception of the everyday, each art being a catalytic agent between herself and the viewer. A catalytic agent is one that causes change but does not change itself. She did not want to make happenings, so she behaved coolly, as if nothing untoward was going on. She wanted to preserve the impact and the uncategorized nature of the confrontation. Just think about that as you go forth in the universe. Break up that monotony, break up that repetition, and don't acknowledge it. It's been a pleasure. I'm your host, Troy Ramos. Join me for the next installment of this Art House Radio saga, the story as it continues. And don't forget to tweet at me, at Spanish Peanuts, at arthouse43, on Facebook. I enabled my Facebook page after 3 months of being away, instantly wasting my time now. But Arthouse43 is on Facebook, so you can like it, whatever. Just post something. Just say anything. Just let me know you're out there. By the way, Denmark, I see you out there downloading my shit. Love you guys. Just let me hear from you. What are you guys doing? What are you thinking? I hear you also down there in New Zealand. I see you. Well, I don't hear you, but I should hear from you. I'm watching the stats. I'm watching. You guys out there got it pretty good down there, don't you? Sounds nice. Let me hear from you. All right? Until next time, friends.